You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I could also say that about my guest co-host today, founder of Kids Give to Kids, Daniel Barrett. And I've been so impressed with what Daniel was doing with this organization that I wanted to get the word out to as many people as possible as quickly as I could. And I've said many times on this show how I believe that we have a shortage of leaders of all ages. And well, Daniel is a leader, and he is modeling positive leadership for thousands of young people, making him a great fit as today's co-host, because we're going to be speaking with a world-renowned leadership consultant. Now, Daniel, rather than me trying to explain what Kids Give to Kids is doing, please share your main objective.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This is a blessing for me. So Kids Give to Kids, first off, we're having a huge event July 31st at our office building in Tustin. It's like an open house event where a few things are happening. One, it's letting people see what we do with their own eyes. It's also a way to get donations in of new toys so we can display them onto our website for kids to choose. And we're going to have bouncies and water slides and superheroes running around. So it's just going to be a great event for the family. We have already close to 300 plus RSVPs, Air One radio stations sponsoring us, so they'll be there. But Kids Give to Kids is primarily a very unique website and nonprofit that allows kids to take their used toys that they do not play with anymore, put onto the website where other kids can go and choose those toys for free. We then have local restaurants, sort of the pickup and drop-off locations. So when a kid picks up a toy or drops off a toy based on one toy at a time, they both receive a kid's meal. And we're the only platform trying to change the true dynamics of less fortunate versus fortunate, making every kid equal based on choice. So kids can pick brand new toys for free, play with them, by choice put them back up as a used toy, and possibly become a giver for the first time in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And in fact, after the show today, my son, who has gotten back from college this year, is coming over, and we're going through all of the boxes of stuff that just got kind of put away as he got older. And he's going to go through all of that so that we can post hopefully quite a few things on there. So we're looking forward to getting involved as well.
Thank you so much. That's exactly what we want to do. We want to kind of change the idea of giving, where it's not just putting it in a box or taking it to Goodwill. By being able to upload a toy and have that toy stay at your house until it's chosen, gets the kid to understand how their toy was chosen and to know in their heart that it was chosen by another kid, instead of just put it into a box or a bag and taking it to Goodwill, which has no learning curve whatsoever.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you have the event coming up, but I know it's July 31st. How can people get involved? And especially because we're going to a lot of different areas, they may not be able to actually come to the Tustin event, but what are some of the other ways that they can get involved or get their kids involved?
So if you're in an Orange County area, then it's very simple. Come to the event, bring a toy, upload toys. If you have too many toys, and like in your case where your son has grown up and he understands giving, so he probably doesn't need to learn that concept. Mm-hmm. He can just fill out a form in the bulk form, mm-hmm. and we'll come and pick up a bulk amount of toys of 10 toys or more. There's a form to fill out and pictures to take of the toys, and we'll come and pick it up. If you're out of state and you want to be a part of this program, you can actually go onto the website and see our address, and you can go on to Amazon and purchase a toy and send it to our office with a note. And then we'll put it on our website and let people know that it was donated from that person, so they can go onto the website and see if it's still there or if it has been chosen. so they can be a part of it that way.
I love this. And I've talked to some parents who said that it really made a huge difference on their child that was the giver. You know, some of that I've talked to was that the part about giving really got their child to open up and sort of feel more, like they were making a difference. And anyway, I just got a lot of really great feedback. So I love the fact that you're doing this.
Yeah, there's foster kids and less fortunate kids that don't have the opportunity to be givers. They are only receivers at this time until they become old enough to decide or be able to give. But at that point, it's now, they may be 15, 16 years old. With our platform, at 3 years old, you can learn how to become a giver. And just like you said, the feeling of giving versus the feeling of receiving is it's two different worlds. You know what I mean? But the opportunity to also choose. Now, that's very, very, very important, because these kids that are less fortunate or in foster care or group homes, they really don't have a choice to choose. They just have a choice of receiving and accepting.
Mm-hmm. Well, so now what is the website that people can go to get more information?
So kidsgivetokids.org.
All right.
So just like on my screen, it says kids give to kids, but then it would be .org.
Perfect. All right. Now for everybody out there, I want you to know that I really appreciate all of you. When you come to this show and you're giving up your time, and to me, that is incredibly valuable. But I'd also like if you could forward this show to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. And I know that now, just when you think about leadership, and it's something that we really need more of all ages, we all know somebody that can benefit from it. So just remember, this is just one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. And I'm just so grateful that not only are you doing this, but that we're getting more people that are now downloading the Attitude of Gratitude Journal. So I'd like people to keep doing that. If you haven't yet, go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. Now, I have a quote, although not from the journal, it is by our guest. You are not in your job because you have all the answers. You are in your job because you have what it takes to find the answers. So before we bring our guest on, Daniel, what is your definition of leadership?
Wow. I think the best leaders are the ones that listen to the people that are working with them, because everybody has great ideas. Everybody has, the capability of making things better. And so I think a great leader teaches others to become great leaders.
I couldn't agree more, which goes right into our topic, because our topic today is also the title of our guest's new book, The Pit of Success: How Leaders Adapt, Succeed, and Repeat. So our guest, David Jennings, is a leadership and organizational change consultant. He has guided leaders from across the globe to navigate the pit of success for themselves, their teams, and their company. He has worked with such organizations as Salesforce, Microsoft, Intel, Oracle, ExxonMobil, Kaiser Permanente, Alaska Airlines, and the FBI. And that's just to name a few. He's been a featured speaker at leadership conferences in 22 countries, and he is also the author of Catapulted: How Great Leaders Succeed Beyond Their Experience, and his articles and commentary have been relied upon by The Washington Post, Forbes, and TheStreet.com. David is an adjunct instructor at Kenan Flagler Business School's Executive Development Program at the University of North Carolina. He earned his PhD researching change resilience. Dave, welcome to Answers Network.
Great to be with you, Alan. And Daniel, I loved hearing all that you're doing with the Kids to Kids. That is really exciting.
And you haven't done nothing, I see.
David, one of the things that I mentioned just in the in the beginning of the show about leaders, and I've even more so, I mean, if depending on when people are listening to this, you know, we're coming out of this pandemic, and we've talked about that. But one of the things that I brought up is that I think what this identified for a lot of us around the world is we have a real shortage of leadership. And one of the reasons why, David, I really wanted to have you on here is because you are out there training the leaders. And I feel that it is what is going to make the difference for us in the future. So share a little bit about your thoughts in regards to maybe how leadership has changed since you've been focused on this?
To me, you know, the changes are more the importance of what was important before is now simply more important. As Daniel talked about, listening becomes important. Things I also push is that setting direction is important. Developing people is important. Empathy is important. All these things, we've heard them. I would say the main thing is they are really important. What you could maybe get by with, I think, is a little bit harder now. And it's every leader's job to really say, all right, what is my real job? In fact, I really push with leaders all the time to think about, how is your job different from what it was? Have you really defined what that is? Because if we don't define what our job is, we will do whatever we've been doing. It's natural to do what you already know how to do. So re-clarifying what is your job, and different leaders' roles are going to be different on that.
You know, growing up in the foster care system and the group homes that I grew up in, I was a broken kid. You know, I didn't get to be taught how to love or be compassionate or empathetic. I learned how to survive. You know, and when you learn how to survive, you also build up these walls that are so impenetrable. No one can get through those walls because you built them to protect yourself, right?
Right.
One of the things we're doing is a lot of kids don't like talking about the situation they grew up in because they feel that it's like their fault or they feel like they were thrown away. And I believe that their story is the most powerful source of educating this world, you know what I mean? Because firsthand, instead of being ashamed of what happened in your life, let people know, hey, this is what happened, but look who I'm becoming. Look who I am now. Now I'm the leader of this organization, or I'm a social worker helping kids that were in the same situation I am in. So my question to you would be, do you feel that your program and what you've been doing over the quite a few years, do you feel that it pertains to like a nonprofit organization?
So I feel the leadership principles apply across nonprofits, profit, old, young. To me, leadership is about humanity. It's not about a certain thing in certain areas. We all have basic human needs. And you talked about the vulnerability, not the word you use, but that's what I thought of having gone through demands and tough situations. What I spend a lot of time doing is trying to convince leaders to become incompetent. Now, that's going to sound strange. I want to convince a leader that their future depends on their willingness to be temporarily incompetent. So what does that mean? That means if you want to achieve something big, you're going to have to do something you don't know how to do. Mm-hmm. And when you talked about the kids who have challenges sharing, they have done a ton of things they didn't know how to do, and they figured out a way to get through it. That is a success story. And the fact that they did things they didn't know how to do over and over again, that is a history of success. When people can realize, and this goes for all ages, when you can realize that you've successfully done things beyond your experience multiple times, you now know that whatever's in front of you, no matter how hard it is, that you're capable. And that is the most important thing I think we can teach leaders of all ages, kids as well, that what you need's within your reach. You can figure this out. And that is not a positive mental attitude. That's research. Your brain can rewire. You can change. You can figure out how to do things you don't know how to do. It's what we're wired to do. We might get into the brain research later, but just the short answer is everybody's wired to do that. Those experiences of, hey, am I enough? You know, should I be embarrassed? No. What your mistakes, your detours, your not knowing, that is life. And figuring those things out is where power lies.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, what sounds like you're talking about really is overcoming obstacles. And what you're saying is we all have them. What are some of the obstacles that you find many of the leaders that you're working with are having, and what are some of the best ways to overcome them?
So leaders have some pretty predictable challenges. One challenge is letting go of whatever they did before. And so we'll start there. So you're good at something, whatever it is. Maybe you're a good computer programmer, a good mechanic, doesn't matter. You're good at something. And then you're now stepping up into a leadership role or the next level of leadership. And the things that made you successful before are the most natural things for you to do. However, the new situation doesn't demand all of those things. So you step in there, start working, it's hard, and what do? What you already know how to do. And that is not a condemnation. So it can sound like, well, oh, they're just going back to their comfort zone. No, they're going back to what their brain is wired to do. That's logical. Mm-hmm. The challenge is to go, yep, I'm good at that, but that's not where my future is. My future is in learning to do something I don't yet know how to do. And as we accept that I'm going to be lost, I'm going to be confused, we actually gain a lot of freedom. I do not know any leader at any level that does not go through this period of being lost and confused. Leadership is about facing challenges you don't know how to do. And that quote you read at the very beginning, saying that, you know, you're not in your job because you have answers, you're in your job to find answers. That is really what it's about, is finding an answer. You have to struggle. It's not going to come to you immediately. Taking the time, taking detours, figuring it out. If you've never done it before, you should not be good, and don't expect to be.
It's funny you say that, because, you know, when I worked 3 years on this program before I launched it, and I had a guy that was supposed to build my app, and, you know, I didn't have no clue how to build an app whatsoever. And he ended up not being able to do it. And so I was in that position of, I'm not a digital guy. I'm not an electronic guy. I'm an out-of-the-box thinker guy, and I can make those, you know, thoughts into a reality. But then I had to end up building a website that I had no clue to build. You know, I literally took a template and just made it my own. And it's working, and it's an everyday process as far as learning new reasons why it's not working, and then figure out the solution to that. But the reality is this, and even to go back a little bit further from my first question, where I say, you know, I wrote a book 6 years ago called Not Loving Yourself is the Biggest Disease on the Planet. And I believe, and I firmly believe this, I wrote 75% of the book in 8 days. And the quote for the book is, it's easy to write a book when God is holding the pen in your hand. And so my firm belief that everything that happens bad in my life now, having God in my life, I look forward to the good that comes from that bad. And so now I can literally, something could horribly happen, like not having my guy build the app for me, which would have made my life a lot easier, and building it myself, right? So by doing that, I was able to really, it was surprising that the idea that I had for him to build would have been completely wrong. It would have been absolutely, it would not have worked. And so by building the website, I was able to see how it really works and how the functionality is. So look, at people are going to be out of their comfort zone all the time, you know? So my question to you is, you know, when people just feel like they're overwhelmed, you know what I mean? There's just no way, and they're at that point of quitting. What would your advice be for them?
The first one actually is a research-based issue of, we know that if you will simply name the emotion, all right? So let's say you're lost, you're overwhelmed, you're feeling worthless, you doubt yourself. If you name that emotion and you just say, hey, I'm overwhelmed, I'm not able to do this. Naming that actually moves the thought from the back of your brain to the front of your brain, which means you move from this emotional response to, I don't know how to do this, to you move it to the prefrontal cortex and you're able to go, oh, all right, I am lost and confused. And then I can start dealing with it. So naming what you feel is one of the first places to go. Naming it is, I forget his name right now, but a famous guy said, name it to tame it. And I think it's a great thought. Name it and you tame the thought. So that'd be the first place I'd go. The other one really relates to this whole idea of, even back to the question from Alan on what can leaders do, and this fits with this as well, is that you want to clarify purpose. The research is real clear when you can pull back and just say, hey, why is this worth doing? And you might think of purpose that you need some grand, beautiful, you know, save the planet kind of purpose. Not at all. Your purpose might be, I want to buy a motorbike. You know, it doesn't have to be grand to be a useful purpose. But we know real clearly that getting through these troughs, getting through this, if you clarify purpose, it gives you a why you should go through that. So we can start with naming it, looking at the purpose. Those are two great places to help us get through it first.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, what I got a little bit from what Daniel said was, I think a lot of it comes to delegation and decision-making. In this day and age, it seems like everything is faster. Everything is a soundbite. So how can we accelerate our decision-making and what do we need from the standpoint of tools and feedbacks? Tools, feedback, and options. What are those things that we can get so that we can start making decisions quicker when we have a situation like that where we delegate something, the person fails us? We can't always be in a situation to where, okay, I'm just going to do it myself. But it sounds like Daniel's done that. I've done that also, because you get frustrated and you just do it. But that probably isn't the best leadership model to follow, because I think we're not going to get where we want to go if we can't either make the decision quicker or delegate it quicker.
Right. You ask a very big question, actually.
Yeah.
So let's just look at delegation generally. The first question is, do I need to delegate? And sometimes the answer is no. I think in Daniel's case, you know, for him, learning it, it was learning as he went and learning what he wanted may have been more important than delegation. If you're going to have a repeated task or it's something that you need your time spent other places, then delegation is a good option. However, there are many cases that you should not delegate, and you have to just admit that, yeah, it's going to take me a while. So first of all, do you need to delegate is the first question. If we've decided that we need to delegate, then I believe the issue becomes, am I developing that person so that they have the abilities to delegate, to receive the delegation? So picking on Daniel's example, here he had a guy that was a designer of software. And for whatever reason, the guy could not design it. The question becomes, were Daniel's instructions not good? Pick it on you, Daniel, no idea. Was his abilities not good? Was the timing not good? I mean, there could be a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. We're going to assume that he didn't have the skills. And so now the question becomes, do I find someone with the skills or do I take the time to develop him? Learning takes mistakes. There is no way around it. I don't care who.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from Roll.
Wow.
All right. Hi, Marty.
Okay.
All right. I don't know if Marty Cove's delegating or not. But,
yeah.
Wherever you are, you know, do I want to develop that person? And that's the real challenge, because they're going to have a learning curve. They're going to do it imperfectly, just like I would do it imperfectly. And so we need to take the time to say, what are the incremental steps for them to grow? if I don't have time to develop them, I might need to look at another person. And that is sometimes the case. So do I have the time to develop them? Your question about, you know, making decision-making faster. And that is kind of a little bit different from delegation, but right. I can't decide if I can't hand off. And so if you're in a situation where you really cannot hand off something to someone else so that you can focus on, I'll call it bigger decisions, whatever word you want to use there, then you need to look at, do I need to develop this person? Do I need to hire a different person? Because if I am unable to spend time on the decision and I'm doing all the work at the level down, then I need to figure out that solution. Which way is it? And many times just, developing the person you have is the best choice. Not always, but often it is. What is the path for them? And that's where you'd want to get clear on the direction, on your expectations for that person. You'd want to get really clear on what success looks like and what success does not look like. And that's a big deal. When you delegate something out to somebody, one of the challenges is you have all this stuff in your head, right? You see it. You tell the person to do it. And what they see is nothing like what you see. Nothing. In fact, we moved into a home that was all dirt on the yard was all dirt. And my wife and I found this beautiful picture in a book. And we both looked at it. We're like, oh, we would love to have the landscape person do that. We showed them the picture and they're like, oh yeah, that's beautiful. A couple of weeks later, he's starting to get ready to do this. And what he's describing is not what my wife wanted, nor what I wanted. And we're going, but we showed you a picture. Come to find out, what my wife saw was different from what I saw, and what the landscape person saw was different. It is hard to delegate what's in our mind, right? So we got to take the time. And one really great tool is, what does that look like? What does it not look like? When you tell someone what something doesn't look like, it actually gives them a boundary. And then they can go, oh, I know not to go over there. And that is really helpful in achieving a direction. As you do that and grow the person, you will have more time for decision-making.
All right. Our guest is international leadership consultant, David Jennings. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, David, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Pit of Success business brand. For everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network. Our guest, David Jennings, is an international leadership expert. And when we went to break, my question had to do with the name of his book, which is The Pit of Success. But let's talk about the business brand.
So the whole idea behind the brand of that is that your future depends on your willingness to do things beyond your experience. And the Pit of Success represents that. It's that you're capable. And that's what we want everyone to know. What you need is learnable. And this is not, again, I think I mentioned earlier, this is not pop psychology. We look at the brain science and how your brain can rewire and learn new skills. What you need is learnable. You can figure out how to do it. And that's what the Pit of Success brand is all about. In fact, when we branded the company is called Learnable Solutions. And the reason we went with that is we want to focus on everyone's ability to learn whatever they need to learn.
And it's a great point. And one of the things, when one of my sons ended up going to a one-on-one private school, and the reason was because they taught him how to learn. And we found that that was the biggest difference between the public school, which was just teaching them how to memorize things, as opposed to a school that focused on, here's the best way to learn. So that when you mention the name of it, Learnable Solutions, it makes so much sense to me, because, you know, it doesn't matter. Memorization isn't necessarily learning, but if you can have solutions to being able to learn things, I think that that is the key. So let's talk about some of the executives, and obviously we're not asking for any names, but, you know, how have executives at some of the companies that I mentioned, like Microsoft or Intel, Salesforce, and others, what are some of the things that made them more successful or more profitable under this type of guidance?
The main thing is normalizing going in and doing things you don't know how to do. So if I could, I want to draw a picture up here. And so what we have here is your current level of ability, and we have a higher level of ability. And as we think about, you know, we're standing here looking up, wanting to be better, we have a challenge in that there is a pit between these two areas. And so when you talk about executives, what are the challenges they face? Any executive, and this actually is all of us, so it's not just executives, but you're used to doing things. And so when you look up there, you're going to say, yes, I want to go up there, but come back to doing what you know how to do. As executives learn to embrace this, what we call the pit of success, as we've taught them to embrace the pit of success, the first thing they always say is, I wish I would have known about this sooner. This is across the board. Any country we're in, when we normalize that this loss, this confusion, this faking that is normal, they kind of all go, oh, you mean I'm normal? I'm okay? Yep, you're okay. You're totally okay. And, you know, I've been in groups where we've had, like, the whole room is 200 or 300 presidents, vice presidents, the whole group. When we talk about this, you can kind of see, like, them look around. You mean everybody else in here is just figuring this out too? It's not just me. So one of the first things is just the acceptance that to go into this space and not be as good as you were is normal and acceptable. When executives get that, it kind of takes a burden off them. And they then pass that on to their people. And this is where they get the leverage, is that they talk with their, maybe any level person is struggling, and they'll sit down with them and they'll say, well, I'm having trouble coding. I'm having trouble learning this new equipment, whatever it is. They'll tell them about, well, you know, let me tell you about a time I was in the pit of success. I was beyond my experience. I was lost. And here's how I figured out how to get through it. You may figure it out differently, but that's the way I got through it. But as they normalize that, and they normalize it in their company, it just becomes this, oh, learning is normal. And like, smart people have to do this too. Yes. And this just creates a learning environment that says, you're not supposed to know it. And this is for, you know, these are execs running billion-dollar companies too. They have to learn just like the newest person on the job. So that is one of the factors. A thought or question on that?
So they got the ego, minus the ego, and everything's good.
Yeah. It's letting go of, I'm supposed to be good. Because even when you're smart, all right, even when you're smart, when you're doing things beyond your experience and you're in this space here, you can be full of doubt and wonder if, well, I've been good up to now, but maybe this is the one that's beyond me. Mm-hmm. And so as we normalize that, people go, oh, okay. So getting that out there, creating a culture that says learning is normal, accelerates innovation, accelerates change, market changes that we're more able to adapt to because we can learn this. And the other part of that is, let's go to the opposite. Organizations that don't have leaders that are able to step into this new space cannot change. If you want an organization to change, the organization, just like the individuals, have to step up. That means a collective of leaders need to be willing to do things beyond their experience and learn it. If they are unable as a collective group to learn a new set of skills, organizations can't change. And yet, it's the most natural thing for any leader to step into this space and go, I think I want to go back home. I want to go back to what I know. Very logical. That's what our brains love.
Well, when you're working with some of these organizations, at that point, is it better to look for a different leader, or is it better to train that leader to be able to step outside of their comfort zone?
No one answer to that. There are cases, and yeah. I've been in cases where we've asked a leader to leave because they are not going to get it fast enough. So the question the organization has to ask is, do we have time for our leader to do this? There are many cases, most cases, where we basically allow leaders to do this. I don't know if you can see that consecutively. They go into one pit, get better, go into another pit, go into another, and it just becomes this escalator up, all right, because we continually go through the pit. There are other cases where the needs of the company are such that I don't have time for you to learn that skill. Mm-hmm. And so those are important cases that we need to look at and let go and say, you know what, we like you, and for the demands we have to have someone that already has these skills.
Okay, makes sense. Now, explain that you refer to a term in the book, it's called results-oriented company retreats, and that have led to really big results once the team is back in the office. I'm one that I've gone to retreats, I go to seminars and stuff, but I think I'm also guilty of the fact that I'm not necessarily bringing everything back that I should. What are some of the tools that you would recommend to be able to get things rolling right away once we get back?
So when I'm helping people design retreats, the thing I look at is not the retreat alone, but the before and after. And so we're figuring out what should happen at the retreat. And I'm telling them, how much time have you built in after the retreat? Do you have days, weeks built in to address issues, or are we just going back to where we were at? So I think one of the first things we can do is say, it's never about the retreat itself. That's a step in the road, but we need to build that in. If we build in something that we can follow up with, then we have the potential to change. So that'd be one. The other thing is making sure that we create something that's doable. Way too mm-hmm. often retreats can become, wow, let's do all this. And you can't. Mm-hmm. This going through this pit is not simple for one person or 10 people. When you've gone to a retreat, you're actually asking 10 or even more people in the organization to change. So we have to build in that there are building blocks and steps to get there. When I first started my company, I came up with a slogan that was, you create the future you make time for. And that to me is the key. If you don't make time for the change, there is no change. It's like in me, when I'm trying to eat healthier, if I don't make time to go to get fresh food, then I go to fast food. Mm-hmm. Until I make time for it, most logical thing to do is do what we know how to do. That's what our brains are wired to do. So we got to create space for that so we can change it and have it stick.
All right. Now, how would you apply this to working with young people? What are some of the differences that you've seen in regards to how they can still take the information in and maintain it so that they take it with them wherever their next step is?
So one step before answering that, when I was writing the book for leaders, I actually originally started writing it for everyone, all right? Mm-hmm. I was looking at the population, and I felt the principles were really about everyone. But then I looked at who I am, and I spend my life with leaders, and so I targeted the examples for leaders. The principles in my opinion, are love principles. They are not merely that you have to have the title of leadership. A parent can use these principles. A youth can use these principles. So then the question becomes how. One is, I think the one thing we could do as parents is mm-hmm. to normalize this learning curve. We need to normalize that, yeah, it's hard to learn and we figure it out. I think sharing our own experiences of learning with our kids and things that didn't work out. I worked on that and it took me a long time and I messed up and I did it again. Normalizing that learning is not A plus B done. Normalizing is A, little B, little C, coming back, doing it some more. So I think parents can do a good job on that. In fact, like one for me, I put this in the book too, is I was speaking in Hungary and my plane was like at 3 or 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I got 2 or 3 hours sleep and then hopped in a taxi, went to the airport, went to pay the taxi. And at the moment I didn't know it, but instead of paying $40 for the taxi, I paid $400 for the taxi because you can imagine your mind at 3 in the morning, yeah. burning in, bills that are unfamiliar with you. I got into the airport and I go, I thought I had more money. and I did have more money, but I just gave it all away. And so, I'm sitting there then, and I was already in the airport, couldn't go back and find the taxi. Right. I'm flying home and I'm saying to myself, so do I tell my kids that their dad just blew it and lost about, $360 because he didn't do his math right? And you're like, that's kind of embarrassing. But I decided to do it. I got home and I said, by the way, I made this mistake. Why did I do that? Because I want to normalize that adults are figuring this out. We don't have all the answers. Yep. We have to figure it out. Now, so that would be one. And just a short positive end to that story. That taxi driver in Budapest, Hungary, he went to my hotel because he couldn't find me. He countered it after I had left. Realized I had paid him too much, went to my hotel, turned the money into them, and they took the money off my bill and called me.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
That is great, because as you were saying it, I was thinking, boy, that guy thought, boy, I sure got a good tip on this one.
Yeah, he realized I had messed up.
Yeah.
And, he did the right thing.
How I relate with what you just said is, we have an anti-bullying program that's very proactive versus reactive. And I believe a couple things. One, I don't believe we're ever going to end bullying. I think it's part of our human nature. And I think the reason it's why it's such a vast, everybody talking about it is because now for the first time it's trackable. We got the social media, we got the different things. It's not like when we were growing up, it was a one-on-one scenario. But with our program, I believe kids are different, but I believe their likes are similar. So we created these questions on our website. What's your favorite superhero? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite food? So on and so forth. The idea is to get these kids to answer this questionnaire. Take the numbers, put them onto our website to where when kids see the numbers of how many kids like pizza, how many kids like macaroni and cheese, they feel that similarity now. You're right. Then we created these little alien little postcards that go into the bags of our toys when we give out the toys. And the idea is we created these aliens to conquer the stereotypes of the world. So it's like Ora Largo, I'm chubby, so what? And the idea is to teach these kids that it isn't the word you're saying, it's the confidence in how you say it. So when a bully comes up to you and says da-da-da-da, and you say, so what? Then the bully moves on. But what if the kid understands what we're doing? And the kid goes, by teaching them that they're similar and says, Jimmy, why are you bullying me? And Jimmy goes, you're different. You're stupid. And Steve goes, no, who's your favorite superhero? And at that time, they have a conversation, maybe a debate of why what superhero is better than the other. So I think by, teaching these kids that they are similar and that they have a lot of likes that are similar, that it could help the idea that, just like you said, they might be going through the same thing in their life. They both may be having parents separating and one child is shy and timid because of it, and the other kid is the bully. So I believe that, you know, you can teach these younger minds a better way to do things. So I believe what you just said just inspired me to tell you that.
Yeah, it's all learnable. We looked at so much research on brain and innovation, on change. And what I am so convinced of is that whatever you need to learn, it is possible. You got to focus. You got to repeat. It takes time. Ideally, you have guidance with others to get you there. But what you need is learnable.
So, David, let's talk a little bit about the book. I'm getting it for my sons. But if you have somebody with, again, some of these larger companies, are they getting it in bulk and giving it to their managers? What are some of the ways that it can be used? Because it's my belief that I wish that in our public school system, if they focused on things like teaching kids leadership or teaching kids how to run a business, we would be so much better off than trying to memorize something that probably isn't going to have much value in the future as far as them, you know, establishing a business, raising a family or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to get it in schools? What are some of the things that you've tried to do with this book and in regards to who to get it to?
So it's new out, and so we are not yet into the schools. I'll tell you, it is my dream to have every new college student get this and have some kind of program. We have not worked on that yet, but I feel so strongly that if you will learn these principles, that it will make you better throughout your life at everything. I have not worked in the elementary and junior high and high school areas as much, but I would love to see the version. We've talked about doing a companion book for those age groups. Not there yet. But one of my thrills was the executive vice president of one of the companies you mentioned. She learning about the pit and stuff, her main thing was, I want to give this to my daughter. And there is nothing that thrills me so much as when one of these business leaders says, my kid needs this. Mm-hmm. Because it's a principle that everyone just, you identify with it, that we all need to be able to go down and back up, regardless of age. So, my quest is to get it there. I have not yet done it. If anybody out there could help us on that process, we would love to get this into the schools.
Well, we do have a lot of teachers and people that work in the school system as viewers and listeners. So if you're out there and you're watching this, think about it. Here at the end, we'll make sure that you know how to get a hold of David and how to get a hold of the book. We have a listener question that has come in. This one reads, I agree that success can be a pit. I ran a successful media production company until I literally became ill and was too burdened. Too burnt out to continue. I fear that my son, who took over the business 10 years ago, is about to do the same. You would think that the more success a company achieves, the more satisfied one would feel, but it tends to be the opposite. It says when you're on top, the fear sets in that you may ultimately fail. I have purchased your book for my son, but plan to read it myself first. Maybe by understanding what I could have done differently, I can help him transition to be less overwhelmed and not in a fearful state. And this is from Andrew in Illinois. And we've got about 2 minutes left.
Andrew, I think all of us face that trap because success is addictive, right? And what happens is we lose sight of purpose, and everybody is susceptible to this, but it's coming back. Ideally, the organization, and I don't know how big your organization was, but yearly, quarterly or something, to have a renewal of, all right, what is our purpose? What are we really trying to succeed at? When we do strategy work, we take people through this process of, what is success? And we spend a lot of time defining what really is success, because if you define success as more, then you probably can never achieve it. And that's where you get sucked in, and it becomes a pit of despair rather than a pit of success. It's a pit of despair because, oh no, I'm helpless here. I can't do it. It's a pit of success as it aligns to my goals and my purpose. And all of us are at risk of getting sucked in. So what would I do for my son in this is I would let him know that they always have a choice. They can figure out whatever they need to figure out. What they need is learnable. They can reclaim what direction they want that business to go. And as they clarify what success is, that will help. Not saying that's easy, but I would just get real clear on what is success. That could be at a family level, a community level, of course, a financial level and a business level, all those different areas.
David, just, I was about to do something else. I was just looking at the time. Anyway, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I really wish that we could have spent more time on this. So, David, thank you so much for coming on, but for writing this book and for focusing on leadership. And again, as I said before, I think that is going to be the biggest difference in, you know, as we go into this next generation of people taking over is we're going to need strong leaders. So thank you for being there. Thank you for training them.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you both, Daniel and Alan. Thanks.
Yes. And Daniel, thank you.
I love listening to you. I feel inspired. Thank you.
Yes. And Daniel, thank you for joining us. And for everybody, please join us next Monday when we are joined by David Erdman. And he's going to discuss his new book, The Ten Commandments of Marriage. It's Secrets of a Divorce Lawyer. And it's one of the statistics that came across me when I was researching this is apparently during this pandemic, divorce or at least separation has skyrocketed. So maybe this will be some things that may help some people stay together. And so for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to the show through all of the platforms, whatever platform you listen to, if it's iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, just go to those. If we're not on there, tell them that you want them to pick up LA Talk Radio. You want them to pick up answers.network. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. So for everybody out there, please be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Erdoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain. And fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain. No mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.